What did you find the cooking process did for you when you were struggling with PTSD the way you were?
It relaxed me. It was my away from everything. It just took me to this trance to where it was art to me, you know? And it also, at the same time, speaking on that, it was educational, because when I learned what to do nutrition-wise, and then teaching the other guys, was I used the food as medicine, as holistic, as caring, as relationships. What food was meant to is as respect, you know, because what's going into your body is going to be the outcome of your mindset. You know, you're feeding not only your body, but you're feeding your mind. I tell people, if your mind goes, that's it. You can't work. You can't do anything. You can't support your family. You are lost. And your mental wellness, no matter how, I'm a big guy. I work out and I do the 2,202 push-ups. But if my mind leaves me, I'm lost 100%.
All right, that's Chef Andre Rush telling how cooking helped save his life after battling PTSD after his military career. Awesome guy. Great story. He's got a great book out, which you're going to hear about in a second. I'm saying that because it's all true, but also because he has 24-inch biceps and I don't want him to kick my ass. He really does. The picture, it's crazy. The picture's crazy. But really interesting story about how cooking not only helped save his life, but turned into a major career cooking for four presidents. Before we get to the full interview, I know somebody that gives lottery tickets to people as birthday gifts. Stop it. If you're one of those people, stop it. It's ridiculous. Talk about just being insignificant to somebody. Nothing says you're more insignificant than giving somebody a ticket where there's a 1 in 400 million chance of winning $10. I mean, the card that the person put the lottery ticket in was more expensive than the ticket. Just if someone gives you a lottery ticket, don't scratch it off, rip it up in front of them, throw them out of your house, and never engage them as a human being again. Yeah, I'm glad I got that off my chest. All right, enjoy the interview with Andre Rush. And by the way, I want to thank everybody who's been coming out to see my tour at, Mohegan Sun recently, Comics Roadhouse Comedy, and in Edmonton, Canada, and Michigan. And I got more shows coming up, Scottsdale, Arizona, in August, as well as in Plano, Texas, and all over the map. So you can see my tour, paulmercurio.com. And thanks for checking out the podcast, as always. And also, please spread the word about the podcast. Get the link out to your friends and keep on and follow me on social media if you're not, at Paul Mercurio. Here is Chef Andre Rush. A very unique guest this week. I'm very excited to have this gentleman on the show. He's a former White House chef, decorated combat veteran, Andre Rush, who has a new book out, a debut memoir called Call Me Chef, Damn It, A Veteran's Journey from the Rural South to the White House. And it's a really fascinating read. Great to have you on the show, Andre.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So I wanted to talk about, because this isn't just about working at the White House, which obviously is part of it, but you know, you're a veteran. You've served multiple tours of duty. You were at the Pentagon in 9/11 when that terrible event happened, and we're actually, I think, working out in the gym there. Can talk about, because you this book is about PTSD. You have a program called, or a method called Cooking to Cope, which is uses food as medicine and therapy to help, you know, military folks overcome depression, PTSD. So what happened to you in that specific instance, and how did that lead to what you're doing now in the book?
When that happened in 9/11, it's like I said, that was the day that the whole entire world changed. And that was the day that I actually changed. And I didn't know what even change was or looked like. And it was extremely traumatic. And I lost some friends. I lost some important people in my life. And I saw a lot of people that was lost after that. And so one blank memory that I remember was I'm working with and I train the DOD guys, the SWAT guys from the gyms and whatnot. And we've got a request that, you know, I know a lot of guys need some support from the DOD, and they brought in people to talk to them. And I asked my supervisor to speak, and he looked at me and he said, do you like your job? And I knew what that meant. I was a young kid and I knew my position, I knew my title, and I knew what it was. At that point in time, you know, PTSD or mental wellness was kind of a huge stigma. I mean, it was, you know, kind of like you're saying with the the World War One and Two, where shell shock was. It was just like a huge stigma for it. And I was a key personnel. And years passed, and what I did was I hid behind culinary and working out. Food became my therapy. Food was my savior. Food saved my life. I would go in and I would just cook and cook and cook, and I was secluded. And the one thing I realized that you have to eat. You know, if you don't eat often, but you're not going to work out all the time if you did, you know. So I started a program with the military. As I had been in two inpatients, one for 6 months, another for 6 months, and I was an outpatient for a year. And I know that I was losing it. I knew that I was failing, and I was getting all the help that I could possibly do. And I was medicated with so many possible medications. And then one day, what I did was I had a sense of clarity, and I threw all the medicine away at one time. I put it all in the bed, and I just looked at all these pills. And I did the worst thing ever, is I stopped cold turkey. And it hurt a lot. more than a lot, actually. That's when I knew that, okay. It was, now I knew what X was going to do with that point. But I knew in my mindset that there was no way that I could wean off of taking 20-some medications a day. So I just did the one thing that I thought was necessary, and my body paid for it, but my mind recovered. It was like a sense of clarity. And so when I was going out with the military, I started this program in USO called Cooking to Cope, where I use food as my therapy, right, as a coping tool. And I brought in men and women with PTSD or mental issues or mental wellness, and I brought them mystery boxes, which was just a bunch of food, no recipes, and I just said, cook. And they were like, what do you mean? Yeah. I don't cook. And we just started cooking, or they started cooking together, and there was confusion, there was anger, there was yelling, and then all of a sudden there was laughter and asking questions. And then there was everybody making these dishes that were horrific and great. And we tasted like fish and laughed. The next thing happened was you brought in the families, the kids and the wives, because with PTSD or mental wellness, you go and you just hide. You have issues with your family, your kids, and put it into a military perspective, right? So if you're in the military and you were trained to do all these things in combat and war, think about the family members who weren't. The kids, they didn't go to war. They're not trained in the military. The wife or the spouse, they're not trained. The man, they're a reflection of you. And so if you bring that to them, they don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to cope with it. So I was fortunate guys brought in their families, and we just became one big family. And to this very day, they still cook.
So what did you find the cooking process did for you when you were struggling with PTSD the way you were? Did it focus you? Did it calm your mind? I mean, I would imagine PTSD is different for different people, and the manifestation of it is different for different people. So in your case, what kind of an effect did it have on you emotionally? What was happening to you mentally, emotionally? And what did cooking do to help sort of calm it down, or whatever the right phrase is?
You know, so that's a great question. So the common denominator is that, you know, everybody can work out like I do. I mean, everybody's not an artist. Everybody isn't a wood carver. Everybody isn't. But the one thing that everybody does is eat. They have food. You know, whether they're ordering or if they start their therapy, is usually it relaxes me. It was my away from everything. It just took me into this trance to where it was art to me, you know, and it also at the same time, speaking on that, it was educational, because when I learned what to do nutrition-wise and then teaching the other guys, was I used the food as medicine, as holistic, as caring, as relationships. What food was meant to is as respect, you know, because what's going into your body is going to be the outcome of your mindset. You know, you're feeding not only your body, but you're feeding your mind. I tell people, if your mind goes, that's it. You can't work. You can't do anything. You can't support your family. You are lost. And your mental wellness, no matter how, I'm a big guy. I work out and I do the 2,202 push-ups. But if my mind leaves me, I'm lost 100%. I have absolutely nothing, you know. So it was crucial. I mean, literally, when I say it saved my life, it literally saved my life.
Unbelievable. By the way, you speak of the 2,222 push-ups. you're incredibly built. Your biceps are amazing. I'm very jealous of you. Do you do those push-ups daily still? And you do you do them in like some increments of like 200 or 300 and then take a break and like a couple seconds? Or how do you do them?
So I do them every day still except for Saturday and Sunday. I do 2,222 push-ups a day. It's not a workout. It's my cause. It's my reason. So it's for 22 vets that commit suicide a day. And I caveat with kids, you know, with mental illness, wellness, also with bullying, antisocial bullying, and all those things. And then from one of my first campaigns from sexual trafficking, things that people stigmatize, things that they don't think about, you know. And I do break them up. So I break them up at 120 and one, I'm to 125, and I'll take a little break. And I finish them up within 2 hours, and it equals out to 17.75, which is also significant. So I did that on purpose as well.
Wow. And I mean, there's pictures of you and you're on the book. I mean, your biceps, it's all about push-ups. Do you do curls or anything? Is it just from all these push-ups?
No. My workout is a lot rougher than my push-ups. I'm an endurance trainer.
My workout makes
pretty my push-ups intense. Look like feathers.
So let me ask you, how did you transition? So now you're in the military and you're cooking, but are you cooking for the military or is this just your own personal therapy when you come up with cooking to cope? And does then that lead to the White House appointment? Because you cooked for Presidents Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump. How did that transition happen?
That was an unlikely transition. It wasn't like I went out to search for the White House because that was not even in my vocabulary. It wasn't even in my peripheral to even do anything like that or even think it was even possible. You know, it was all about resiliency and working and habit, you know, working harder than anybody else, you know, being able to be in the right places and doing things that nobody else could do or doing things that were more impactful. And that's kind of how I got the support to go over there the first time in 96. And that led to other things of saying, you got there, now you have to stay there. And it's all about relationships, all about being a team player. And I tell people there's no arrogance. So you always have to have humility and gratitude for everything you do, because in this culinary world, and people don't know it, some of the chefs can be a little bit arrogant. Some of the chefs can be a little bit more, it's about me and whatnot, but it's never about me. It's always about team. It's team building. We're team players. Mm-hmm. So we have to do all those things to help support each other. And in the culinary world, just like in the bodybuilding world or corporate world or whatnot, which I'm appreciative that I'm getting involved in all of them, it's the same thing.
And how did the White House appointment happen that you started to actually be a chef for the presidents? Was it through someone that you knew at the White House and that there was an opening and they needed a chef? Or
so first thing I tell people always, because they for some reason they just think it's really simple to do, is not on Craigslist or Backstage or whatever you call it.
Right.
People like they call me like they always text me, "Chef, how can I be there? I want to go there." I'm like, "Okay, good luck with that."
go on Indeed and drop your resume. Right,
exactly. Indeed, guys, of course. But it is about, you know, like I said, you have to have your clearance, your TSSCIs or above, and Yankees and Polys and all those things. So I've had there a very long time, and I actually got mine at a very young age because it's scrutinized, and they can take it away from you in a heartbeat if anything red light, you know, is taken away. And that's one of the requirements, is that you have to be on that level. You have to be vetted. And then you also have the skill set and the work habits with it. When I got in, a funny story is that the person who actually took me there was the same person who didn't want me to even come work for him. And later on, he's actually my mentor now. But when I came in, I was a young kid. I was unlikely a chef. I was an unlikely chef. And, you know, that's where the title came from, when he called me Chef Dammit. He was a chef. I was just a kid that loved cooking. And he didn't want me there. And I found out later on that because he said he was intimidated. And he said that he felt like, you know, because I came with all this drive and ambitions and whatnot. And we had a conversation. And I said, Chef, I was just there to support you. I am an extension of you. I don't care about accolades or any of those different things. And what happened was, we were doing a big meal one day and we had some royalty there. And there's the irony of it was this cake that he had did a million times in Olympics and all this that I've seen him do for the first time ever. It fell apart. And the brand, the leaders there were, he was in shell shock because it's never happened before. And the leaders looked at me as a young kid and said, can you fix this? And I had no idea how, but I did. I said, yes. And the cake takes 2 days to make. I made it within 45 minutes. And it came out perfect. And from there, he came to me humbly and he said, great job, chef. And he said, I want to take you somewhere. And that was my first time. I had no idea where it was going to be. He just said, I want to take you somewhere. And when he told me, he didn't know that I didn't know that I knew that he didn't want me there. But after my first Olympics he brought me to, he told me in private that, you know, that he did that. And I told him that I already knew. And he said, you knew already? And I said, yeah. I said, I knew. I said, that wasn't going to stop me from working from you. That wasn't going to stop my work habits. I said, I work for you. This is our job. This is what we do. I'm here to learn from you. And from there, we became best of friends. And to this very day, he still mentors me.
That's great. So and I'm sorry, I'm sure you get asked this all the time. And I try not to ask questions that guests get asked all the time. But I got to ask. So four presidents, what is sort of the process for, do you set a menu, a weekly menu? I imagine there's a learning curve where you start to get to know what these presidents and their family likes and don't like. And the second question is, just tell us if you can, some unique requests or likes that the various presidents had that might surprise us, you know, certain special dishes that they loved or sweet tooths or whatever it might be.
Well, I use the word terminology, you know, like a syllabus or a cheat sheet. Everyone has a cheat sheet they bring along with them, whether you're deriving or as it comes about, meaning that, you know, like one of POTUS, the administration come and say, hey, here's a list of things that we like and things that we don't like. And then, you know, maybe one of the other chefs can introduce them to something else. I introduce them to something else. I'm like, oh, you know what? I like this. And it goes on the list and so on and so forth. Right. So everybody kind of has that whole preference because you got to remember they're out eating everywhere with all this butter and these creams. And so you're trying to stay healthy and trying to be on the go and not exercising like, you know, regularly. But as far as the other part of it, like things that I like and, you know what, surprisingly, the same thing caveat from that meaning that they keep it simple. You know, they have sweet tooths from the Hershey Kisses to the M&Ms to, you know, the red velvet cakes to burgers a little bit different, like cooked more so or something. It just all that kind of like depended on them. No one like, back in the days, they had some crazy stuff, you know, like, for instance, with Bush not liking the broccoli, you know, and say, okay, right. No broccoli for me, no vegetables, no this, no that.
And that was true. That wasn't just press. That was true. Like, he didn't like broccoli. I know Clinton liked burgers and fatty foods and stuff. Oh, that was true.
Yep. Clinton liked burgers and fatty foods, but she was on that. She was on him, well, you know. She was on him all the time about that part of it. But then also when the Obamas came in with the garden, when the Flores came in, then that was all about the healthy lifestyle. That was about the pyramid. So it was necessary and implemented that everything has something from the garden to all of the dishes, which was absolutely amazing because it's so colorful and vibrant and herb tone that it was just crazy.
Yeah. Did you ever get any like really crazy requests for something, either for the presidents or the family or for heads of state that had to, anything like that just surprised you or was difficult to put together, but you did it or anything like that?
You know, I'll be very honest with you. Nothing surprises me. I mean, I've eaten bugs before. That doesn't, you know, by accident on purpose. So that really surprises me. But if they asked for that would surprise me. I'm like, oh, I got something right here. But people like, you know, the only thing I'll say is like, you know, when you're doing a dinner or whatnot, you do have those people with religious purposes or so. One thing I'll tell you is that everything I use a phrase where I say food can end wars and start wars, right? Because of relationships and because of protocol or heritage or things that they do, religious, I mean, it's a really big theme. You have to know what to do and what not to do, what to serve people, what not to serve people, not like just for allergies, but out of respect. You know, for instance, if you use things where like pork, or if you come to the left side instead of the right, right. side, or come to the right side, or stand behind some person or reach over somebody, they can take it as an insult or disrespect. And they can think that you're supposed to know that because you're coming to their table, right? And the same thing applies. You know, I have had some people who does eat differently than the rest of the crew, which is also a protocol thing. But that's another story.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, it's a fantastic book, a great life, and you're doing a lot of great stuff for good causes, and you really, it's really admirable. The book is Call Me Chef, Damn It, A Veteran's Journey from the Rural South to the White House, and it's great to have you on, Chef Andre Rush. Congratulations on the book and all your success.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
There you go. Very cool guy. I want to be him in every way. Especially 24-inch biceps. But really great story, great book. And thank you for checking out the show this week, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. And we will see you next week.